The best five-man lineups in the Eastern Conference. A look at some rankings via Bleacher Report that certainly raised some questions around looking at a Brooklyn Nets roster that's going to include one Kevin Durant, one Kyrie Irving, one Ben Simmons, and in this projected starting five, Joe Harris and Nicholas Claxton. We break down where some of these other teams stack up, why it's right, why it's wrong, and why the Nets seemingly are being held underneath a cloud of doubt coming into the upcoming season. We dive in next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That is right, my friends. It is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. You know that I am Adam Arbert breaking down the New York Football Giants over on the One Giant podcast with my boy Andy Mack. The regular season is upon us. Over there, not available. Doug Norrie, owner-operator DFSR for all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel. He's got you covered. You know that we'd be having some light banter at the top of the show where I thank you for making us your first listen of the day, and we're free on all those great platforms. And then I'd say, Doug, we got to get into a conversation here running live over on YouTube as well. Why not? It's a Wednesday night. Figure dive in with both feet as the offseason continues to roll along here, looking ahead to the upcoming, obviously, training camps next month, trying to get a sense of where the Brooklyn Nets are and where a lot of rosters are around this league. And as we say at the top, and as you see from the tag and the title on this episode, a recent ranking of Eastern Conference starting five following the Donovan Mitchell trade to the Cleveland Cavaliers had me at least raising some eyebrows when I took a look at some of the rankings and where the Brooklyn Nets stand. Doug obviously had a great conversation the other day talking about Donovan Mitchell, Cleveland being the team that acquired him, and what it means for the Brooklyn Nets, what it potentially means for the Eastern Conference. And we're going to tap into all of them, but I will say any offseason moves, and there's a couple of things that are kind of bubbling up here. Doug and I are going to come in and talk about who's had the best offseason around the league, who's maybe had the worst based on expectations, where they finished last year, and where they hope to go in the upcoming season. But it always does feel like possibilities, projections, rankings, betting lines, it all moves on the narratives. It all moves on the latest story. You would expect, if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you acquire Donovan Mitchell, that you're going to skyrocket up the potential Eastern Conference contenders, the potential title contenders in the NBA. And yet, it becomes very easy to start to look past some of the other teams in the East, some of the other teams around the league. That being the case, over on Bleach Report, this was an article written up by one, I think it's Greg Schwartz. We can confirm that here in a second. Indeed, it was Greg Schwartz over on Bleacher Report talking about, as I said, rankings, NBA Eastern Conference, starting lineups after the Cavs Donovan Mitchell trade. Now, coming into this, as you, I think, would reasonably expect, at least in this moment, it's going to look like the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Nicholas Claxton, and Joe Harris starting five. We had a discussion around breaking down those minutes. Some fans may be thinking that Joe Harris should be a guy that comes off the bench in lieu of Seth Curry. Any number of combinations that could happen here. Where is Royce O'Neal's role going to be? But we're talking about the starting five, even just they have in this moment on here. And I'm happy having that starting five be the representation for the Brooklyn Nets. I'm not going to tell you where they rank on this list to start. I think we'll kind of do a little bit of a sandwich combination here where we highlight who's at the top of the list. We don't have to deal with some of the back end guys. We know that the Indiana Pacers, the Orlando Magic, who are 15th, by the way, followed by 14 with the Detroit Pistons. The Pacers come in 13th on this list, still having Miles Turner on there. And then you work through the Washington Wizards and the likes of the Charlotte Hornets at 11. Then you get into the top 10, and I think where it starts to become interesting. So 10 is the New York Knicks. If they had made the big trade for Donovan Mitchell, who knows where they would be on this list. But then you work to, right away, just to give you some context around where this list is seemingly going, the Miami Heat are 9th on this one. And understanding they lost P.J. Tucker, when you talk about a starting lineup, it's going to be Lowry, Strus, Butler, Caleb Martin, and Bam Adebayo. this is a team that at least a year or two ago, and we don't know what the state of Lowry's game is going to be, was a team that wanted to get to the playoffs and then be that veteran experienced team, play behind Butler, have Bam Adebayo take over for you and start to roll in the playoffs. I don't, at least just from a respect standpoint, 9 feels a little bit low as we work our way through it, but there's reasons why, especially coming off last season, a team like the Chicago Bulls would be 8th. A team like the Toronto Raptors would be 7th, which I'm a little bit curious to take a deeper look here. But flip it all the way to the top of this one, because right at the top is the Boston Celtics. And they're about as surefire a team that you could plug into the top position in the Eastern Conference when we talk about best starting 5-man lineup. It's why, when all the speculation around would Kevin Durant be traded, could Boston be a partner, and the package that it would require to get back, it's why it'd be hard for the Boston Celtics to let a lineup like Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, and Robert Williams III to be broken up. Inside of the article, it goes on to say a net rating of plus 24 in 443 minutes is no fluke when you're talking about the cohesiveness, the consistency with which this team played. Now, they do mention that Al Horford at some point could start to fall by the wayside. But the funny thing, if you want to frame it that way for the Eastern Conference and for the Brooklyn Nets, is that eventually he could be replaced by Grant Williams. And when the 23-year-old forward shared the floor with Tatum, Brown, Smart, and Robert Williams, Boston's net rating was somehow even better at plus 31 when it had been previous to that, the plus 24.6 that I mentioned. So in theory, the number one starting 5-man lineup in the Eastern Conference could conceivably actually get better were they to make a switch somewhere along the way underneath Ime Udoka, something that he already showed he's capable of doing as a head coach. Basically, midstream, broke this thing down and rebuilt it back up to be a far more dangerous, far more potent, far more balanced team overall, and one that made it all the way to the NBA Finals. Can't knock it. Would like to, would want to, feel like I need to. But guess what? You can't knock Boston being at the top of this list. And we'll add into this as well the second ranked team on this list, which is, of course, the Milwaukee Bucks. Before we talk about 3, 4, 5 and where Brooklyn stacks up in this and why I objectively don't quite understand how we'll get there. We'll get there, friends. Projected starting 5-man lineup for the Milwaukee Bucks is Holiday, Middleton, Brook Lopez, Grayson Allen behind one Giannis. Now it's Giannis, Holiday, and Middleton. That's really what we're talking about here. The interesting thing for them, which is a part of all of this though, you have Middleton, the injury, he's coming back from that. But there's not necessarily, Boston being among them, it's hard to find a three like Milwaukee has in their starting five that is more complementary to one another. Jrue Holiday and his best version of his skill set flourishes when you have the length and the size of a Middleton and the shooting prowess to go along with the freak that is Giannis, right? So what Jrue Holiday would have been on another team, hard to say, but his ceiling is absolutely maximized here. What I find interesting is like Brook Lopez, older, going in the wrong direction. You can call him ceremonial five, but I think there's going to be a lot of legwork done by the rotation here when you look at the Milwaukee Bucks. And then Grayson Allen. This isn't a throw-in, but when you're thinking about best five-man lineup, we talk about the fact that this was a team looking at Grayson Allen specifically, and there is a comp here for the Brooklyn Nets. He is the player that hit, let's see here, equally dangerous, shooting off the catch at 40% and pulling up, he was knocking down 43% as well. So there is a player inside of this that offers a little bit of that wrinkle for the team. But if Grayson Allen is someone who's maybe coming into his own and finding his pocket on this roster, Brook Lopez at 34 years old, getting a little bit longer in the tooth, he's the variable, just like Al Horford for Boston, you have to keep an eye on and see what is the replacement in the wings should that start to fall apart. And that's arguably not having a Grant Williams to plug in right there, why Milwaukee falls a little bit further down the list. Coming up here in a second, we tap into teams 3 and 4 and 5 where we have that mystery of where the Brooklyn Nets are and why I cannot, in good conscience, allow them to be ranked where they are. Before we do that, though, my friends, got to tell you about our other friends over at Built Bar. We check over here on the left-hand side of the screen where we know that you can go ahead and get the cookie dough churro puffs. Oh boy, if I'm reading it right, and I like to think that I am, just 160 calories while being packed with a whopping 15 grams of protein. You know that you can roll over to built.com, excuse me, right now and buy a box for you and for your family. You've heard Doug say this before. He gets a box delivered, people start to clamor, starts to be a little bit of murmur in the household, the old Nori household. You hear the whispers. We're going to get some of those. Do we have to take that down? If that's what it looks like, then that's what it has to be. You know that they're good for you. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, as every single bar and variation thereof is for Built Bars. You get them on the go. You throw them in your gym bag. High protein boost, low calorie, low sugar, not like those nasty candy bars you're eating. And if you go right now, by the way, friends, over to Built.com, use promo code LOCKEDON15, and you'll get 15% off on your order. That's LOCKEDON15 at Built.com for 15% off on your order. Turn the page. Team number three on the list of the Eastern Conference rankings. We're going to be talking about none other than the Philadelphia 76ers. And this is a nice one. This is one that makes a lot of sense. And why before I kind of shuffled through some of those early teams, talking about a team like the Miami Heat, who are a couple of players that they lost, right? They lost somebody that happens to be on the Brooklyn Nets. They also lost someone in PJ Tucker who went to the Philadelphia 76ers, someone else that some fans thought could have been a target for Brooklyn this offseason to bring him in. Every team has their wrinkles. But if we talk about, again, the big three dynamic here is Joel Embiid, James Harden, and Tyrese Maxey. Again, that combination of those three players, when Harden came in, plus 17.6, and one that also offered them an offensive and defensive balance. If you are a team that has a Joel Embiid, a team that has Giannis, there's two teams like that in the league, it creates an easy offensive to defensive flow because you know how much value and versatility and what a dangerous weapon they can be on both ends. It's what allows everyone around them to play that much better. The interesting thing for me, again, is the addition of PJ Tucker. We know what he is. He's a pest. He's a bother. But as highlighted here, Tucker should be an easy fit with his extremely low usage offensive pace, who will spend most of his time setting screens and spacing the floor and heading to the corner to knock down threes. A whopping 88.6% of his three-point attempts came from the corners, and he converted 41.5% of those looks. The big question mark for me is, again, age and time and usage. Brooklyn Nets fans would have loved to have heard that James Harden had gotten himself into the best shape of his life coming into one of the seasons for Brooklyn. Instead, that's what you hear this offseason about him for Philadelphia, obviously trying to take advantage and maximize what he's going to be for this team. Tobias Harris being the other guy inside of this five-man lineup, I think, is going to be fascinating, obviously. There's a world where he comes close to living up to what his contract is. And arguably, like, PJ Tucker may help in that as well. So I would never debate Boston or Milwaukee or Philadelphia being in and around this top three conversation. But as with every team, there is this variable, and I think there's some untapped potential for success here. Maxey is a component of that, and Tobias Harris is a component of that with the addition of PJ Tucker into this starting lineup. I have no qualms. You may be noticing, though, we're coming to team number four. And the hard part here is that team number four is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I mentioned at the top, the Cavs traded for Donovan Mitchell. It's what spawned this conversation. Okay, fine. A starting lineup that has Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert, Evan Mobley, and Jarrett Allen. I understand how good this team can be. Arguably, they could have four all-stars, if you start to think about including Mobley in that, that are going to be on their starting lineup, that caliber of player. However, even if we're going to talk about it, the one thing you have to acknowledge here, as every team has, Middleton, the injury for Milwaukee. Here, it's Caris LeVert on paper in theory, but he's a guy who's often injured. You can tell me that this team is going to be potent from a scoring standpoint now adding in Donovan Mitchell. You can also tell me that it does nothing to help what their backcourt defensive strength is going to be. They mentioned about Ricky Rubio recovering from his torn ACL. As they say, neither of these guys are going to be stopping anyone. So in a lot of ways, from a scoring perspective at these particular positions, it's going to be about outshooting people. And in that regard, the front court could be even better, as mentioned here. With Mobley and Allen on the floor, the Cavs allowed just 105.7 points per 100 possessions, a mark that ranked in the 94th percentile. So there is a bit of a variable here. If you think that that defensive quality can stay there with Mobley and Allen, and they can get better coming into this season, and now you add the firepower that is Donovan Mitchell. Once again, I am not here to debate whether or not these teams should be in the discussion. I just have a really hard time. As Doug and I talked about with player rankings, depending on where guys were put, Ben Simmons was one of them. Kyrie was one of them. Kevin Durant was safely inside of that top 10, top five area. When you looked at a guy like Kyrie, what was the knock? Well, you're talking about availability and if he'll be on the floor. You can go through any of these teams, 1 through 15, and talk about injury concerns, talk about production, talk about guys that have had contract gripes. You can talk about everything non-basketball related. But if the premise here is to use stats and to use the on-paper lineup that is going to be out there on a night-in, night-out basis, this is where I start to run into an issue when we turn our attention over to the Brooklyn Nets. We'll tap into it here, and then obviously we're going to dissect it a little bit more on the back end, and it also does lead into this other conversation that we've been seeing out there that will extend well beyond this episode, some of the available free agents, some of the top landing spots, and there really is a specific name out there, one that's familiar to the New York area, and I think this is the cautionary tale, not just for Nets fans, but NBA fans across the league. Not just hearing a name, but also maybe getting lost in production that can sometimes be hollow stats as opposed to things that show true value on both ends of the floor. That being the case, wouldn't you know it, at number five, it is the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know if there's more that I need to say in terms of having an issue with it than it's Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, and Nicholas Claxton. Again, on paper, right? Because Ben Simmons has been hurt. But on paper, name any one of those four lineups ahead of the Brooklyn Nets on this list that has a more dangerous and more talented, more, can be on par, but a more talented top three players on paper than the Brooklyn Nets have. You can't. You can make the case that Giannis is a singularly better talent, especially if you go by 2K ratings, something that Kevin Durant has a problem with. You can say that Giannis is a singularly better talent. You can say that Embiid is if you want to do that, right? But you cannot talk about Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and what Ben Simmons, even as we know him to have been, to not be as good as, on par, or better than any of the four teams ahead of them. Now, when we talk full five-man lineup, we'll get into that here in a second. Nicholas Claxton and Joe Harris being the big factors there. But just as the tip of the iceberg to this conversation, do not forget that when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were on the floor together, they registered a plus 13.1, and we've heard some other ones there, up in the mid-20s, north of 30 for the Boston Celtics when they get Grant Williams in there. But they were an eye-popping 122.8 offensive rating. That's where the conversation begins. And then we take it a layer deeper with Ben Simmons, with Nicholas Claxton, and Joe Harris. We do that next. I feel on fire tonight, guys. Feeling very fresh. Podcast feed, YouTube feed live. Enjoying myself. As I said, you know who Kevin Durant is. You know who Kyrie Irving is. Now, they do say, Greg Schwartz inside of this article, that Simmons, and here it is, the Nets arguably have the most talented starting five in the East, but there are too many questions to rank them any higher for now. I call bull. How can you make the statement that they arguably have the most talented starting five and then also say, but a lot to think about there? There's a lot to think about a new player coming onto a new team, which Ben Simmons essentially is here, right? Four other guys in the starting five for the Nets have familiarity with one another. the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to have a new superstar talent, ball-dominant talent, entering into their starting five. The Boston Celtics, consistent. No roster turnover. Try to bring in someone like Gallinari. Try to make moves to have this team be better in the offseason. But they are keeping consistency, and the production is there. The ratings are there. The numbers bear it out. The Milwaukee Bucks, likewise, consistency, yes. But now it's about, is Brook Lopez going to be able to hold up? Is Middleton going to come back healthy from his injury? No reason to think otherwise. But how are they going to tweak, right? How are they going to move? Even if Ben Simmons is just a defensive player, even if all he accomplishes for the Brooklyn Nets is having his defensive value, and I'm going to say combined with being the facilitator offensively, right? Tell me that this guy can be a 15 to 20 point scorer a game just based on happenstance of being on the floor with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and can also go ahead and get, I don't even care, the scoring. Again, put it to the side. Tell me that he can't be a double-double guy, assist and rebound. Done. End of discussion. And everything that he does defensively for you. I don't know. These conversations over the last 2 years, I get why. But the angle and the slant that gets taken with the Brooklyn Nets, that because we saw this happen a year ago, this past year, that somehow is determining of what the outcome will be this season. It's not true. Just because the Milwaukee Bucks won the championship the year prior and were bringing back the same squad, they were destined to go to the finals again. Middleton gets hurt. If Middleton had been hurt the year prior, how would you have looked at the upcoming season differently? You can't. Likewise, when we talk about a guy like Joe Harris, I have a really hard time. I have a hard time wrapping my head around this. It's not often that I get worked up around the idea that the Brooklyn Nets are being disrespected. They've had their own ups and downs. They've had their offseason fun. But Joe Harris is, of course, coming off two ankle surgeries. So in the alternative mode of this, it is Seth Curry. Another debate for another day. What's the best version of this starting lineup for the Brooklyn Nets? Do you sacrifice a little more size to bring in a little more offensive athleticism and versatility and give up something defensively there as well? But you know you have Ben Simmons now on this roster. He has, of course, though, thrived inside of this starting five-man lineup. Sorry, this starting, we'll say, four-man lineup when you even include Nicholas Claxton. And you can go take a look at just him in the best three-man lineups with Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. He is one of the best three-point shooters in the game, bar none. We're not talking about the playoffs, where it has been a mixed bag. Still been good, but has had some of the all-time worst performances in there as well. Accepted. The other part of this is, again, Nicholas Claxton. And we've talked about this on previous episodes. His versatility defensively and the expectations you put on him offensively dramatically change with the addition of Ben Simmons into this lineup. Ben Simmons is now your best defender. So the second most dangerous assignment can be taken on by Nicholas Claxton. You have two players on this team that defensively can guard 1-5. If it's an Embiid, hey, another discussion to have. True of anyone, right? There's going to be some matchups that are going to be difficult no matter who you are. But Nicholas Claxton has already shown the ability to, on switches, pick up a guard and follow him to the rim without fouling and provide contested defense at the basket, as well as extending out beyond the three-point line, as well as switching out on wings, right? There is plenty of versatility that exists in Nicholas Claxton to start. Now you are doubling down on it by putting Ben Simmons in front of him defensively and creating further defensive versatility, to say nothing of what Kevin Durant is as a defender as well. The unknown is always going to be a factor in these discussions, but I'm going to bank on what the upside of that unknown is. Like I can project what the best version of this lineup is. And it's as potent as anything in the Eastern Conference. I can also project the worst version of this lineup and every other lineup in the Eastern Conference. And that's where putting them fifth just, to me, falls apart so hard on the argument that, well, the Cleveland Cavaliers have added Donovan Mitchell. Okay, what if Jared Allen goes down? What if Mitchell, give me one injury. What if Caris LeVert re-injures himself? What if that dynamic offensive scoring in the backcourt suffers on a matchup-to-matchup basis because they don't have the size defensively at the guard spots to hold up against some more difficult assignments. What does that look like for you? Philadelphia, a dangerous team. But again, in the best version of themselves, Harden, Maxey, and Joel Embiid, is that toe-to-toe with the supporting cast of P.J. Tucker and Tobias Harris? Do I want P.J. Tucker and Tobias Harris, or do I want, boy, Harris or Harris, Joe Harris and Nicholas Claxton? Depending on who your top three are, it changes who you want your backup two to be. And right on down the line you go when you walk through this list. Lists are funny. They're interesting. They can sometimes be silly. I think it's silly to say anything other than there's probably Boston, maybe clearly at the top of what they accomplished last year, the consistency, the versatility, and all the numbers to back it up. And then probably two to three to four teams, five teams maybe, that you put into this group that based on paper, any one of them could come out of that pack. And if I'm going to go on pedigree, and if I'm going to go on careers, and if I'm going to go on the numbers beyond just one season, then I'm going to hang my hat on Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, and Nicholas Claxton to be above some of these other teams near the top of the list. That's my soapbox, friends. That's how you do the dance. It'll be fascinating to see. I know everybody is in on the conversation over here in the chat. I appreciate it. If we were running two hosts tonight, we'd be doing more over there. I'm going to look through them, get back into the comments on this one as well, because I do want the feedback around just where you think this team is. Because if this is the best five-man lineup, sure, depth rotations, that helps you. But now we're talking about projecting the Eastern Conference. Should Cleveland, on paper, with the talent you see on paper, should they be above the Brooklyn Nets in the Eastern Conference? Where is Philadelphia in that hierarchy? How do they go toe-to-toe? Remember, once upon a time last year, a completely in disarray Brooklyn Nets team beat those Philadelphia 76ers in, for all intents and purposes, the same form and fashion they're going to be represented this year. Addition of P.J. Tucker. We all get that. A footnote that maybe we'll get into down the line here at some point is that team number six, which, by the way, makes sense to me to a certain extent, and I'll throw these in here, and Doug will come in. Maybe we'll touch back into this. We'll tap into this best available destinations tease for tomorrow's show. Carmelo Anthony is the landing spot player. And there's numbers that tell you, yeah, there could be value there, but they also could be a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Depends on where he goes. Likewise for a lot of trade candidates, free agent or otherwise. But I will say, if I found it shocking or at least insulting in some way that the Brooklyn Nets were fifth on this list, I think the Atlanta Hawks coming out with Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, DeAndre Hunter, John Collins, and Clint Capella, is it a coin flip putting them ahead of Pascal Siakam, Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, Gary Trent Jr., and Fred VanVleet. That's a really fun debate. That's a really great conversation. And one of the things that Doug and I are going to talk about is who had that best off season. Well, we know, right, that the Atlanta Hawks made a big move to go get DeJounte Murray. But when we tap into some of the names on the market, John Collins is one of them. So there's teams that are kind of in these states of flux. And when I look at 6-7 and the Toronto Raptors and Nick Nurse and the way that they're coaching, boy, is it hard to bet against them. So maybe we'll tap back into this conversation tomorrow on the podcast. That'll be for Friday's show that Doug and I will get back into this discussion. You get over on the YouTube channel where you're watching this right now, if you're a watcher, and you subscribe, you get into the conversation, you hit up those comments, you turn it over to the podcast feed, get those wherever you get those needs filled, subscribe over there as well. Give a glowing review if you're so inclined. We appreciate it. Takes nothing, free to do, and we greatly appreciate it every single time. I, my friends, have got to shut it down. And as always, in the absence of my co-host, there is no quote short of saying that I miss my friend and I want him back here soon so we can continue talking all things Brooklyn Nets basketball.
Yo,